Welcome to What's Eric Eating, Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. Today on the show, I'll have a conversation with a couple of people in the food world I think you'll want to hear from. They are the owners of Mimo, an Italian restaurant at the East End. Gentlemen, let me introduce you separately so people can hear your voices. Sommelier Mike Sammons, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
It's been a long time. Chef Fernando Rios, this is your first time. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir, for having us here.
So, look, I mean, Mike, obviously, you've been on the show a couple of times. Fernando, you've never been on the show before.
No, never.
So let me start with you. Just tell people a little bit about your background, because, I mean, I know you guys, you know, I met you when you were at Weights & Measures. I know you worked for Marco Wiles for a long time. So just kind of tell people how you got started as a professional chef.
Yes. Well, I was going to school, and then I guess I took a small break from school and went to a restaurant called Baxter Cafe with a bunch of friends. But I was 18 at the time, so just to go look at the restaurant because I was trying to get in the industry. And I got hired on the spot by Chef Hugo Ortega. This is 1994. Ended up staying there for like 7 years. So pretty exciting to get a job that quick, you know, come from school or whatever, and still not graduated yet. It was nice to like actually get in the kitchen that, you know, was at that time very pushing, you know.
Yeah, this is, I mean, we should say this is a pre-Hugo's.
Yes.
Chef Hugo Ortega. Yes. So, you know, he was, I guess, you know, he was in charge of this kind of comfort food River Oaks restaurant, yes. but exploring like a lot of different flavors.
Yeah, and actually left when they, a month before they opened Hugo. So I was kind of involved with everything they were trying to come up with the first concept for Hugo's menu and stuff. So ended up leaving a month before. But that was pretty cool to see that flourish.
And then you were at DeMarco for a long time, right?
Yes, I was at DeMarco. After that, I actually took a long break. I guess I worked at a restaurant called Cafe Rabelais for a couple months. And I got in contact with one of the waiters from DeMarco. And he's the one that told me, hey, Chef Marco wants to speak to you about maybe joining the team. And I went to talk to him and got the job also on the spot. Okay. Never, ever have I done an application for any job. So it was weird. All my jobs, I just think got them like that.
Well, and we should say, I mean, this is when DeMarco, I mean, people still think very highly of it, but this is when it was like,
oh yeah,
maybe the best restaurant in Houston.
Yeah, it's for Italian food for sure. That was there for 12 years. So yeah, I was there through the whole process of DeMarco and then Dolce Vita and Poscolo and so on. But yeah, it was just a very demanding chef, and like everything had to be just very like special, and it was hard. Don't get me wrong, it was a hard restaurant to work in because it's a small kitchen, but yeah, he's just an incredible chef.
Well, and did you have a background in Italian food when you
never
started working there?
Never. I think I was getting very comfortable with Backstreet at the time, and I guess that kind of food, the new American style. But once I started DeMarco, it was just, I don't know, it was just a different time for me, and it just made me love Italian food for sure, and just learn everything from there.
And Mike, I think this is when you enter the picture, right? You guys worked together at DeMarco.
Yeah, we met at DeMarco. And I was working there under Antonio Gianola, who, you know, is now he's at the Houston Wine Merchant. And he's definitely my wine mentor. He taught me everything. His phone number is still printed in the office at 13 for if there's ever a question about wine, we call him. But he actually lives down the street here as well. And he's a good friend. But yeah, we met there, and it's actually a pretty good story. I can tell it real quick.
Yeah, please do.
So the first time I met Fernando, he walked out of the kitchen. Is it okay if I tell this?
Yeah, of course, man.
He walked out of the kitchen, and I had never met him and didn't know him. And I was behind the bar, of course. And he walked over to the pizza oven to, I don't know what he was cooking, but he just looked at me, and I'd never spoken to this guy before. I didn't know who he was. He didn't know who I was. And he came out and he said, I don't know, man. I've just been thinking about new words. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he's like, well, you know, like words that like people would say, like surfers, you know? And I was like, what are you talking about? And he's like, I don't know, man. Just like words they would say, like, I don't know, like that's splashy. And I was like, yeah, that's pretty good. What about like wavy? And he was like, yeah, that's pretty good too. And that was it. Like we became immediate.
Pretty dumb story, but
yeah, pretty dumb story. Yeah. But we saw the same humor, you know, and so it was a totally irreverent and didn't make any sense, but it was funny.
Right, because cooks and front of house people don't always get along. Right?
Oh no,
like never. But we definitely did immediately, and then over the next few years, we kept talking and just kind of bullshitting together, and I don't know, we really saw things eye to eye. Really, like to this day, we can look at a dish and kind of we will basically share the same opinions on it.
Yeah,
and that's really worked to our benefit, I think. But yeah, it was a funny story.
All right, now let me just fast forward a little bit because, you know, I know you were kind of the opening chef de cuisine or sous chef or whatever your official title was for Weights and Measures. Mike, you were a partner in Weights and Measures. So just talk a little bit about kind of how that came together and how you guys decided to start working together.
Well, so I was at DeMarco at the time and decided, I guess I wanted to take the next step was take over the kitchen in total. And Mike offered me the position to work there at Weights and Measures under Richard Kaplan, original owner and chef of the restaurant. Yeah, it was hard to leave DeMarco, obviously, to start a new venture on, like, I want to say it was kind of like new at the time also as well. I mean, there was really nothing like it when it came to like breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
And a bakery.
Yeah, it was incredible. It was incredible. It was really hard. Just a huge task to take on.
Yeah.
Well, and in some ways it kind of brought together your time at DeMarco and your time at Backstreet because it was that like seasonal approach, like very focused on local ingredients, but with the huge dough program with all the pizza and the pasta.
Yeah, it was great because, I mean, as soon as I saw the glass pasta room, I told Mike, it's like, I don't think it is in 2014, right?
Yeah, when did you open? 13, 14?
Yeah, 13, 14. So there was nothing, there was no room like it ever. And I don't think I ever saw it in the U.S. either. I think after they opened, obviously, Felix and Trattoria in Los Angeles, that's the second time I've seen a glass pasta room. But we did start doing it there. People, I mean, it was nice to see people walking by, seeing us do pasta by hand, everything. It was incredible. It was a good time. It was very hard. It was different. Yeah. We were there for 7 years, and it was just like, yeah, it's a huge project.
It was a brutal undertaking.
Yeah.
And you know that that's true because like no one has tried it since, right? No one does breakfast, lunch, and dinner 7 days a week, late night cocktail service.
Oh yeah.
I don't think it's been done since.
No, and then at the time it was like, I think our record was 700 people on a Saturday brunch. And that was insane. It was too much. It was fun. Don't get me wrong. It was nice to have that, you know, that freedom to do everything, you know, and be creative, but it takes a toll.
And it never stopped. It was
It never stopped.
I would be leaving at night when Max the baker would be walking through the door.
Yeah,
like it was crazy.
But a lot of people came in through those doors, and especially workers, and it was cool.
Yeah,
it's
a good experience.
Yeah, it was a good experience, and we met a lot of cooks and now chefs and owners from other restaurants. That's pretty cool. They came up from there.
I think it's fair to say it was an education.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I think it really was. Like, what not to do either.
Yeah, exactly.
In the industry.
Yeah,
and then Mike, obviously, you kind of stepped away from that. You did. You opened How to Survive, mm-hmm. Not far from Mimo in the East End.
Yeah.
What do you kind of take from that experience? How did it kind of prepare you to do this now?
Well, I opened How to Survive in 2020 on the cusp of COVID. And so that was its own challenge, of course. And that presented me with a whole bunch of personal challenges as well, which is probably for another podcast. But I don't know. Opening How to Survive at that time alone was also an education. And I think I learned a lot from that for sure about restraint. And for one thing, and also just negotiating sort of the fabric of this neighborhood, the East End, the Second Ward. But I think I learned a lot from that. And I brought a lot of that to the table, pardon the pun here.
All right. So talk about the decision to reunite with Fernando to open Mimo. Because you claimed Kanawam, the sort of legendary Houston Thai restaurant that also closed during the pandemic. So, so kind of talk about like coming into this space and deciding that, you know, what the East End really needed was an Italian restaurant.
Well, I live right down the street. I live two blocks away from this building, and I'd been here for a while. Fernando, actually, I've been looking at the space sort of with no designs on it whatsoever. Just noticed that like it had been not open as much as it once was. And so, you know, realizing there's probably something going on. But Fernando located the space without really speaking to me much about it until he found it. It's kind of a coincidence. But the minute he found the space, and I was out of town at the time. I'd been working in New Orleans in the French Quarter, actually, oddly enough. But yeah, he secured the place. And it was really, I don't think there was much question that we were just going to do an Italian restaurant here together. That was sort of something we'd always talked about. And it just never, honestly, it never seemed like it was going to really happen.
It is one of the, obviously, one of the hardest decisions to make, to try to open, you know, this kind of restaurant in this side of town.
Yes.
Because I was looking around and, you know, I, like anybody else in the industry, was looking for like spaces in the Heights and stuff like that, where it's saturated with a bunch of restaurants, which would have been probably ideal for us. But for us, it was just, for me personally, I think it was just growing up here in this neighborhood since I was a kid, wanted to come back, try to do something here different, and try probably be one of the first people to actually try to open this kind of restaurant here in this site. Yeah. Was very hard, but I wanted to do that and have that, I don't know how to say it. I guess just that excitement of bringing something different to this neighborhood.
And something new. And I'm sorry to interrupt, but also, like, it's important to note that he's from this neighborhood. I was born in this neighborhood as well. So we've come back by whatever means.
Yeah.
It's just so weird. But it just seemed to make sense that we'd be here. And much like 13 at the time in Midtown, like, there was nothing there as well. It was very sparsely served, to say the least, and up and coming, much like the Second Word.
I mean, it's harder now because, you know, after COVID, it kind of changed. But I think that we have something special here. And I still think we have what it takes to have a successful restaurant in this neighborhood. So
yeah. Talk a little bit about kind of your culinary perspective, because you're not, obviously, this isn't Red Sauce Italian. I don't really think of it as like necessary, but it's not like completely traditional Italian. Like, you're kind of doing your own thing here. So
yes. I think what I do is that I take the experience I've had with DeMarco, obviously the high end Italian restaurant and the traditional dishes they have there. My take on it is just have a little fun with it and maybe just change it up a little bit when it comes to sauces and ingredients. But I mean, 80% is still traditional, but I'm just changing just the style of it and maybe the sauce of it or anything like that. Or we just try to make a little bit something different, to gathering, I guess, my experience from other restaurants that I've worked at, just bringing all that together to this place and just trying to develop some new dishes that, I don't know, I think they're pretty unique. I don't think that we can't be compared to any restaurant, like, to be honest, any other Italian restaurant. Because it's just very different. It's not the same.
And just to add, the name Mimo, it means mockingbird in Italian. Yeah. And the whole, I mean, it's a little corny maybe, but the point is that, like, we're at like a mockingbird. We take something and we sort of repeat it, but with our own voice.
Yeah,
it's fair.
So,
yeah, I mean, I remember when you guys opened, you kind of started slow, like a little bit under the radar. You know, the sandwiches, the Italian beef, that, you know, mozzarella. That, like, breaded mozzarella
and
cosa.
Yeah. And, you know, now obviously you have a whole range of pastas and meat entrees and stuff, but, you know, like, what was it kind of like getting it off the ground? Like,
it was, for us, it was very hard.
It was hard.
It was hard because I think that we came in with
no money
at all. So it was money that we just, both of us had savings and stuff like that. But, decided to go solo and no investors, there was possibility of getting investors for sure. And there was people that talked to us before opening here. But getting them on board to a neighborhood that was still coming up was very difficult, to make them understand that, hey, have faith, man. This is going to be good. But it's hard to get investors on the same boat when they're seeing, like, why would you want to open the east side? They don't see it. Now they're starting to see it.
Yeah.
You know, and now they're like, every once in a while they come back and eat and they're like, man, I don't know how you made it. You know, this is great. Yeah. Like, this is badass. Like,
well, and I think it would have been one thing to be like e-dough, you know, like, mm-hmm. you could point to Nancy's Hustle and be like, look, it's working there.
Yeah. Exactly.
But you're, and it's not that we're so far east of there, but it is that kind of critical couple miles.
Yes. 1.7 miles.
But, yeah. but all the difference in the world.
Yeah. About 8 minutes. Yes, and it makes a huge difference. Absolutely. I mean, things change drastically from what is considered Edo, or what is technically Edo, to the greater East End, which is where we are.
Yeah, I was having a hard time with when they were just telling me Edo. I was like, what is that?
Yeah.
Because that was always the Second War was always since I was a kid, you know, and it's like, Edo, where's Edo? And
Yeah, that was when I was growing up, that was Old Chinatown, right? That's where we went to Hung Ki for Chinese buffet and places
exactly.
like
Well,
that.
that was the first time I ever had Chinese food was in Chinatown behind George Brown.
Mm.
So yeah, that was literally the first time I had that kind of experience.
So how has the menu evolved? I mean, because you guys have been open for a couple of years now,
Yeah.
so kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, we did the sandwiches, and I still think to this day they're pretty unique and different. It's hard to get a good sandwich in Houston for sure.
Yeah. We definitely we're looking for a place to make that a reality, but it'll come
It'll
eventually.
come. But yeah, we started like that, and obviously, that was just something for us to like actually do while we were trying to open, and it was fun. It was fun, and I still want to do it. And I guess after that, when we started talking about the menu, because the menu changed like before we even opened like three or four times. We're like, this is it. And then the second time was like, no, this is not it. Let's do another one. And then we did another one. It was like, until we found the right like balance of like what we're trying to accomplish here. Trying to do something here that was slightly different. Maybe it is different than other Italian restaurants. So but I think we come along pretty, I guess, I don't
We
know.
have done so many different
I know.
things in this with this restaurant in 2 years. I mean,
And we've been
daily
going back
specials
and forth.
literally every
Yeah.
day,
It's like,
multiple
geez.
specials every day, and just trying new things all the time. I mean, this guy never stops with the ideas. So I don't, but I think that's dynamic and like a good thing for a restaurant to be constantly morphing and changing.
And I still believe in seasonal changing the menu. Why? I mean, I know a lot of restaurants, they keep the same menu and they're consistent with it, and that's fine. But for me, it's just not getting bored. And the kitchen staff being active of doing some new dishes every season, and that's kind of cool to change it up. And for me, it still gives me, you know, time to explore other kind of cuisines in Italy. I mean, again, Italy's like there's so many dishes that still hasn't been done here in Houston,
Yeah.
and we just have to bring it, like try to.
Well, yeah. I mean, give me a couple examples. Like, what are some of the ones that you're particularly proud of that you feel like you did maybe before, or that you hadn't seen anywhere else in Houston when you were serving it?
Yeah, I think the well, I mean, it's a lot of them, but just an example like the salata that we have.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say too.
When we were at Weights and Measures, I decided by trying to come up with new salad ideas, because you know that's just the start of the meal. But when I started discovering, you know, the salads and then the new radicchios and all this other leaves that you know that I've never seen in a salad. And then when I did the Castelfranco for the first time, and it was a Weights and Measures, did it for a special Weights and Measures. And the Castelfranco, the leaf was fantastic. And I was like, wait, let me try to do it here at this restaurant. How can I bring the Italian, you know, style to it? And we started doing the cheeses, Italian cheeses with it. And we started doing some dressings that was a little different because I used a miso base. But it's one of the dishes that for me, I'm happy and kind of proud of. It's just that developing something that's not very common. Now you see it everywhere. Everybody's now shaving, you know, pecorino and Parmigiano Reggiano or something fresh cheese on top of the salad now, like abundant, you know, how you say
Snow.
like a snow. And I'm every time I see it, I'm like, yeah, I was part of that. I think I did that. I did that in the city with nobody was doing it yet. And anyway, but that makes me proud. And like I said, I'm happy with the pasta program that we're developing now. I think it's great. We have more space, meaning by that I cleaned out a room in the back and actually have a table now. And it's just, you know, it's just better. And, you know, having fresh pasta makes a different big difference for sure. But I'm not staying away from dry pasta because I like dry pasta as well. There's dishes that have to use dry pasta.
Well, I mean, I remember I did this dinner at Weights and Measures years ago with this podcaster who had invented a
Oh my
pasta
God.
shape,
Oh yeah. Yeah, that was
and he had this rant about how spaghetti sucks. And you're such a purist. You're such a
that
pasta fan.
that was the
You were
worst time of my life.
so mad that
I was so
he
mad.
said that.
No, I was mad because he first because it was at the restaurant that I was working in, my kitchen. And for him to say that, it was just like, why are you saying this? Like you developed something that was perfect. Every dish in Italy, all the pasta shapes are perfect. That's why they make them like
Made
that.
for like specific reasons. But yeah,
Yes.
this would be a good time to so you know we always have to give you something.
Yes, for people who haven't been listening to the show for 8 years, like you have, when you were on in like 2018, 19, whatever, you showed up with a Morrow, I think, like a.
Oh, it was a truce.
Oh
Yeah,
yes, that's
chartreuse.
true.
And anyway, a few other things. But this time I'm not giving you anything. Chef's giving you something.
Yeah.
So I think what do you think?
Well, I mean, it's fresh pappardelle. This is one of my. It's a simple pasta, but it's you can use it so many fucking ways, man. Bolognese, just a vegetable base or tomato base, cheese base. It doesn't matter. I mean, it's just a great pasta shape, and it's nice and thin and thick enough for a good, bite. But it's fresh, and I made a couple of them for you and maybe two guests.
You made it like an
Yeah,
hour,
an hour
almost an
ago.
hour ago.
All right. How are you using pappardelle at the restaurant?
We use it at pappardelle with the lamb dish. This is we braise lamb shoulder, and it's yeah. This is how we use it in the restaurant. So it's a braised lamb shoulder pappardelle.
It's actually the most popular
Yeah,
dish.
it is
We
the most
I don't
popular.
think we've ever taken it
No,
off,
I
have we?
can't because every time I try to take it off, there's always one customer who says, "Where
Yeah.
is it?" Like that's the only reason I came
It's
for.
the only, I think it's the only thing that's actually stayed on besides
The
the salad.
salad,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. It's the only thing that's stayed on the since day one.
Well, and there's those croquettes, right?
Oh
The
yeah. Oh yeah. Those too.
the
Yeah. But
croquettes and
those
the
have even
fritters,
changed a little bit. Those have changed a little bit too,
and the
but
fritters. Yeah, the fritters are.
yeah, the squash fritters, right? Those
Yeah,
are.
it's one of the, it's some of the dishes like any chef can tell you in any restaurant, they just can't take it off. It's always gonna have it's gonna have a staple in the restaurant, and people are gonna want to always see it somehow.
Gnocchi as well, like that's something he makes.
But we changed the
We've
gnocchi.
changed the yes, but the gnocchi itself is always
It was always the
it's
same.
always
Yeah.
And Mike, obviously, I mean, you're the beverage guy. So talk about this wine list and kind of how it works with chef's food.
well, yeah. So how it works with chef food is like the number one priority is to find acid. So all the wines are going to have huge acid profiles, but also like chef, I like to keep it interesting. And I always try to find something new and something, particularly something new and delicious that I can pour by the glass. That's kind of a big focus here. So we pour everything by the half glass, the glass, and of course the bottle. But it's constantly changing and rotating. We started actually, this is something I just realized like a week ago, is like we started with, I think we had 20 wines on the list, on the actual wine list. And we had so few wines on the list that I, like, in order to make a wine list that looked like it was substantial enough for any restaurant, I actually had to write like paragraph long descriptions of the wines just to kind of flesh out
Yeah,
some substance.
between me and Mike, we brought from home like maybe
You're
we
not supposed
collected
to
like
do
well, I know, but we
that.
collected like maybe 60
Yeah.
bottles.
But anyway, but yeah, now we've got well over, I think we've got over 150 wines on the wine list and plus another 20 by the glass. So it's just always changing and morphing. And it honestly has grown probably to the point where it needs to stop, but I have a weakness for French wine, so I keep buying that, even though that's really not the focus here. So mostly Italian with a little bit of French, and of course there's some Austrian, a little bit of Spain, some Portuguese stuff, and like a little bit of New World stuff, not much. But yeah, it's just one of those things. Like his food, it has to stand up to the food, so it has to be changing and morphing and growing all the time. So it's gotten to be kind of a beast, but I still keep it in its cage for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when you opened and you're like, we're just doing one region at a time, right?
Yeah,
That
yeah.
was the that was it was like this month we're doing whatever, and then next month we'll do another one.
That's
And it was
right.
like, so you built the thing over, you know.
Forgot about that. That's true.
So, I mean, 2 years in, like, how's it going?
It's going.
Yeah.
I mean, look, we have zero debt. We pay our bills. We make our payroll. We don't have a lot of the issues that a restaurant like ours would typically have. It was again, like it was brutal at first. It was rough. But we've gotten to a point where like now we're not laboring as much as we once were. We're like working a little bit smarter, I think. So
Yeah.
I guess we're successful in that we found like a level playing ground now
Yeah.
where we can kind of focus on what's important, which of course is quality and like updating our what we're offering, just
And I
making
guess at
sure
the
we're
end
doing.
of the day, that's what we're looking for. Somewhere where I mean, a place where we could come in and be happy, be here.
Yeah, and in that sense, we've definitely, I think we've definitely achieved that.
Yeah, we achieved that for sure. Yeah, when I come in the door in the kitchen, I'm like, there's nothing inside me that I'm upset of. It's not, as soon as I walk in, I'm my place. I'm happy.
It's home, yeah. To answer that question for any other restaurateurs or bar owners, we don't have any debt. So there's that. So just to answer your question, yeah, zero debt.
Go home and sleep well, like
Yeah,
that's
I
it.
sleep very well.
Yeah.
And that and just to elaborate on that for just a minute, that might not have been possible if you had opened in the Heights or
No.
Montrose or something, right? Like,
Exactly. Well, not for us. Well, yeah.
No.
I can't say for everyone, because everybody has different experiences,
Yeah.
but yeah, for us definitely
Yeah.
was, yeah.
I honestly don't think it could have happened anywhere else but where we. I mean, literally, I can't think of another place where it would have worked.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, we have some very kind landlords here at Thlacket Pocket Market who've treated us very well and been really supportive and believed in what we were doing. And without that, there's no way. So we have to give them a
Yeah,
lot of credit.
and like I said, we worked at other restaurants where that was one of the issues. But Marco Wiles for me was just a great mentor, and always told me, like, just always pay your bills, man. Pay your bills, and try not to get too many people involved in a project.
Also that.
Yeah, that was always his thing, and he always told me that.
You know, he's like an enigmatic figure for me because I don't know, like, even for as long as I've been doing this, I don't know that I've ever met him in person.
Well, I mean, we got invited for their
Yeah, we got invited to
for
his
25th
25th, yeah.
25th anniversary, and it was out of the blue that, well, he called me. He's been here at the restaurant, and to get his approval for me personally, and to come to the restaurant and actually eat here, and the 3 times he's been here, it's just exciting, man, to see, a great mentor for me personally, to get accepted, and say, hey, man, you're doing a great job. Like, this is pretty badass, and this is a guy that's been everywhere around the world to eat also as well. But not only that, but it's just a great mentor. But yeah, he's very private for sure, and for us to get invited to that 25th anniversary was pretty cool. I actually go back for the first time for me so many years ago, step in that restaurant and the kitchen and everything. It was pretty cool. It's a good feeling. And me and Mike were just looking at each other like, damn, man, that's where it started.
Yeah. And confession time for me, I'll say this is an exclusive to the
Okay. All
podcast.
right.
Yeah. So Marco Wiles is the only restaurateur or restaurant owner or chef that actually makes me extremely nervous. Like when he comes in the restaurant, I'm like, damn it. I'm looking at all these things that I forgot to do, all these little details that I'm not focused on. And he's the only guy that does that to me, and I wish he'd stop.
All right. Why like not Antonio Gianola, your mentor in wine, not Richard Kaplan, who was your business partner at Weights & Measures, both of whom I've seen eating at this restaurant before. What is it about Marco Wiles that makes you nervous?
Well, because he's really not forgiving about things. Like he's pretty, I mean, this is very consistent with the Italian way of looking at things. Just like there's one way to do things and it's the right way and that's it. And like if it's not done that way, it's wrong,
Yeah.
right? And so he definitely like cultivates that. And I think a lot of my other mentors and friends and be the people I look up to, they can be a little bit more forgiving, which I appreciate. But also I have to admit that the standards that Marco has kept over the years does
Yeah.
motivate me.
And this is strange, because when we went back for this anniversary thing, was like, still he's the same way.
Yeah.
That was insane to me. I thought, you get older, you'd be more relaxed,
Yeah.
or but shit, man, it's like the same stare at you and the way he looks at you, and you get nervous, man, because once you work in his kitchen like I did, and Mike worked in the front of the house obviously, but even in the kitchen was brutal. Like, I mean, there was times where he would literally throw all my stuff I just made fresh in the trash and say, start over. I'm like, did you try it? I mean, did you? He's like, no, I don't need to try it. I already know it's shit. Let's throw it away. Make it again. I was
Brutal.
like, oh my God. But I was younger, and yeah, and I, actually every day I went home, I'd be like, why am I going back the next day? I should just go to another restaurant.
And we should say, when he told you that, he was right.
Yeah, he's
Yes.
right.
Oh yeah,
That's
absolutely.
the thing.
Absolutely. Yes. He was right all the time. And that's what makes him a unique figure in the Houston food industry for me. I don't think there's not enough credit for him to actually, I don't know, man. I just think that he's one of the best to do it. When he did Dolce Vita, was an insane thing to ever happen in Houston, and he just always has his ideas, and it's just great, man. And I think that's what also made us do this kind of restaurant ourselves too,
Absolutely.
and pick it apart and paint and do this and do that like he did with Dolce Vita and his restaurant. So
Yeah, I mean, spiritually, like this is kind of the 2020s version of Dolce Vita, except you don't have the pizza.
no, well, we
You
do.
make pizza every now and then.
Well, I mean, we have a pizza, or we have two.
We have two.
We have two pizzas, but we do have specials pizza mostly every day, because we always ask for stuff.
And you know, we took a cue from you actually when we asked you about we wanted to sort of augment our pizza program, and you were like, why? Like, there's, you remember this? You were like,
No, I
yeah,
don't.
Yeah,
you were
you did
like,
say that.
you were
Yeah.
like, why? There's a lot of places to do pizza. Like, why are you focusing on that? And we were like, actually, he's got a point. So we don't look. Our pizzas will stand up to any in town. Like, no doubt. Our dough is fantastic, and the pizzas are great. But that's not all we do, and we didn't want to be pigeonholed into that. Like, we don't want to be in
So
a
you were right when you
not
said
and
that.
like, no offense to the great pizzerias in town,
Because
but
we
like,
did say, like, why would you say that?
yeah.
It wasn't good enough, or was
No, but it
that?
was like there's other things we can do, so why not do those and you know, use that as a focus as opposed to just another pizzeria, which, you know, I mean, God, how many are there?
I know now.
Yeah, and more all the time.
Yeah,
Yeah,
more.
yeah.
The other thing I want to ask you about is kind of your relationship to this neighborhood, because again, there's not a lot of elevated dining in the East End. There's certainly, you know, I mean, the only Italian food that I'm aware of is Mandola's Deli down the street, right? Which is a very different, like a historic restaurant and a very delicious restaurant, but is it's not, you guys aren't doing the same thing in any way. So talk about kind of building a relationship with your neighborhood and maybe kind of changing what people expect from this neighborhood.
If I may, like, so thank you for asking that question. That's of course very important to us. The East End is a vibrant neighborhood that is growing in leaps and bounds. Like, I mean, okay, before 2020, when I guess I moved here in 2016, so I've been here a while now, and it was just like growing like crazy, and then it kind of stopped during COVID, and of course, you know, how the world changed, but it came back really quick, and now like there's so much going on, not only in our square but in the neighborhood itself. In our square alone, right here off the telephone, and I think it's about as far east as most people in the city are willing to go right now. There's a lot of art concepts that are opening up. There's Redbird Press right down the street, which is very interesting. A girl, Lauren Chrisley, started it, and she got all the old equipment from the Houston Frenney Museum, and it's all in her shop. So that alone is just like interesting just to go look at. But she's been
Very
doing
cool store.
some cool stuff. She even painted our the sign above our door that says "Ristorante," which is very important to us. Donkey Boy, who's like a local East Side muralist, and like I used to see his stickers all over the place. Like, he just moved in into our square. He's opening up, I think next month. He'll have like a boutique and art space there. Very cool. Of course, his Bohemios has been here for, I don't know, 50 years now, which continues to attract an insane amount of people. There's live shows all the time. There's also a little place down the street that I'm not sure if you're aware of, Mr. Sabor, that just opened up. It's Cajun and Spanish, but he just opened. So, and we haven't even been there yet. We,
No.
we've spoken to him, but we haven't even had a chance to go yet.
Yeah.
And then, not to mention, of course, Street to Kitchen is just down the road. There's just a lot of cool stuff happening here. And I mean, and then there's the Standbys have been here for a little while, like Moon Tower. I mean, and of course, you can't forget Champ Burger down the street.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of cool things going on around here. And I think in a very short time, I think people are going to realize that.
Yeah, we
And
got Nickel City Bar. We got
yeah, a lot of stuff.
it's a cool areas.
Yeah, there's something new. It seems like there's a lot of space here, and it's a big neighborhood. So it's like there's something new popping up like literally every week. Just down the street, another place has popped up, but he'll be opening soon, called Food Plug. Have you heard of this?
I have not heard of Food
Yeah.
Plug.
Well, he's just like, he started out. I don't know too much about him. He put up his signs right down the street on Dumble and Telephone right there. But the last I saw him, I was biking around TSU campus down the street, and he had a food truck out there. And now I just saw a sign here. So there's just like something new. Like, it's like seems like every day. So I encourage people to come to this neighborhood and check it out, because there's
And I
a
want
lot
people
going
also
on.
to understand that it's not upscale restaurant. It's very casual and fun. So I hope they don't think that we're how you say that kind of restaurant where you have to come in.
No, we're
Well,
relax. If we're nothing else but relax. Yes, we pay attention to details, but it's cool.
there you go.
Yeah, no, there's a humility to this place. Like, you know, it's got like pretty simple decor, and it really puts the focus on the food, right? And I will say I like bringing friends here. I like bringing dates here because more often than not, they haven't been. And I know that whatever else is going to go, like the food is going to be great. And it's surprising a little bit, I think, when people kind of, they put this in the Google Maps and it navigates them here. And then they're like, where am I? Like, where are we eating? And then it's like, don't worry, I got it. So I look a little smarter when I come here with people, which is good for me, I think.
But and also like that's one of the beautiful things about a restaurant in this day and age when you can Google everything and find out everything you need to know about it online. I remember like popping into, I mean, Cafe Ravioli is a good example. Like the first time I went there, I knew nothing about it. I just popped in and was like, wow, this is incredible. Still to this day, one of the best French restaurants in town. But it was one of the things I just discovered without knowing too much about it. And at least we can
But it's
maintain
kind
a
of
little
cool
bit of that,
to have that feeling, Street Kitchen when there were their space, the old space, to get there was kind of a,
It's a journey.
the journey. But that's the whole thing, that is when you have a good restaurant, you'll want to make that journey to get there, every once in a while go back and eat. Because I mean they were doing great there and decided to move, bigger
Closer.
space and closer to downtown, which we're not that far from downtown. Like
Let's just stress that again. We're not that
yes.
far from downtown.
You're not far from downtown. You're very close to U of H and TSU. So if you're a U of H student, like this is your date night
There
spot.
you go.
All right, so we're running a little long. I don't want to get too lost in the weeds, but tell me about kind of your future plans. I mean, like I said, I'm used to sandwiches at lunch. I know a lot of people miss the sandwiches at lunch. You mentioned you want to bring them back. So what's up with that? When are we going to get sandwiches again?
So we more than anything, we want to do that again. We just have to figure out like there's just not enough daytime traffic in this area to I think to make that work. We definitely tried. And I think we did a really good job. But for something like sandwiches, to make them like quite frankly, to make them affordable and like doable for lunch, like you need traffic, you need a lot of people. So we gotta figure out how that works. So yes, we are actively talking to people about a space. We do want to stay in this neighborhood, so that's a priority. So that's where it gets a little bit tricky. But yeah, we're working on it, and it's our number one priority. Number two is we want some sort of a small Italian cocktail bar, but that's second. Like number one is we need to get this panino sandwich thing going because, like we said before, it's hard to find a good sandwich in this
It
town.
is.
And it's still there's still a debate whether the banh mi is actually a sandwich. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I tell people is we don't necessarily have like a big sandwich culture, but we have banh mi and we have burgers and we have tacos for days. And sorry that there's not like a lot of East Coast hoagies. Like that's when people say there's no good sandwiches in this town, that's really what they mean is we don't have like East Coast subs and grinders and
That's
hoagies.
right. Yeah, that's true. It's hard to find an Italian beef.
Right. It's hard to find like a, it's weird that the best like cold cuts, Italian style cold cuts with cheese and oil and vinegar is probably at Primo Hoagies, right? A chain from Philly.
You feel like we should have that, but I don't know. But we tried to make that work, and it didn't quite work. It almost worked, but I think location when it comes to lunch and. In Houston is definitely like a huge factor. So maybe if we can find a spot a little closer in with a little bit more traffic, it might work. But yeah, that's definitely a priority for
I mean,
sure.
they're doing a great job at Ironworks.
Yeah,
That
that place looks
space
great.
there, yeah, it's pretty busy all the time. And I think they have a sandwich shop, right?
Did you? But yeah, to answer your question, that's the immediate future is just we've only been open 2 years, so. 4 years, I think, is about what it takes to get a restaurant really like humming and singing like it should. So over the next year, we're just going to focus on tightening all the screws and just cleaning up our program as much as possible and just making it like
And still
flawlessly.
developing great dishes every day.
I mean, talk about just because I think the last time I was in, I had what the shrimp. That was new. All right.
We started the fall menu and we put some new items on the fall
Spring.
menu for
Spring.
sure. I mean, sorry. That's why I said fall. Spring. Sorry, spring. I'm lost. Spring. And that was a new dish that we have now. And it's a, like I said, it was the roasted tiger shrimp with the andouille and Yeah, it's a great dish.
Yeah,
I like it. It's very simple, but something about that Italian sausage and that smokiness from the paprika and all. I mean, it's just a good dish.
if you've ever had the harissa shrimp at
Yeah, you
Giacomo's,
told me that.
you're going to be a fan of
Yeah.
the
Yeah. You heard you. Yeah, you told me that night about
nduja
that.
shrimp at Mimo.
The harissa. I haven't had harissa in a while since Waste Measures. So.
All right. Is there anything I haven't asked you about that you want to discuss?
No, I think you did a pretty good job asking you some really great questions.
All right. Well, before I let you go, we have to play the lightning round. Five easy questions, five short answers. Just say the first thing that comes to mind. Mike, since you did this before, we'll just do Fernando.
Oh, okay.
Fernando Rios, what is your favorite ingredient?
Salt, sea salt.
What is the first band you ever saw in concert?
You too.
What is your fast food guilty pleasure? It has to come from a restaurant with a drive-thru.
What, drive-through? Shit. I don't know if it's considered drive-through. I drive there and get it. Dots. Yeah.
I'll take that. That's
Yeah.
fine. That's
Yeah, dots is
an East End staple. I'll take Dot.
You're not supposed to tell anybody about
I
that.
know, man, but it's just like we go there. I mean, it's silly, but how many times we go there? A week, sometimes a
It's
week.
insane how many
It's
times you
insane.
go.
Yeah.
It's quietly one of the best chicken fried steaks in Houston, and there
Yeah.
are some nights when it's the only thing I crave in this
Yeah.
world.
We,
All right, next question is, who is your favorite Houston sports figure, past or present?
I want to say Hakeem Olajuwon.
It's a good answer. And then finally, what is a new Houston restaurant you haven't been to yet, but you are dying to try?
Honestly, Basel.
Yeah, I knew he was going to say that.
Yeah, I've been trying to get there. I've been trying to get some time off and do it, but every time I try to do something, somebody either gets sick in the kitchen or something happens. But hopefully, I'll get there. It's my goal the next month, maybe,
They
be
open
there.
tonight?
No, they're closed on Mondays.
These
Yeah,
like still
I
going
know.
on.
I'm at every day. It's something. I can't make it, but I will.
All right. Give us the website and the social media for Mimo.
WW, I don't, no one says that
You don't
anymore.
have to say WW anymore.
God, I'm old. Mimo, MIMOHTX.com is a website, and there's not a lot on it, but there's all that you need to know right there, including menus and all that stuff. And then Mimo, MIMOHOUTX is our Instagrams. And that's really all the social media that we are capable of using at the moment,
But it's
because
a good Insta follow because you put your specials up and you keep it, you're updating it, you're with it. All right.
try try
Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank
Thank
you.
you.
Thank you.
You can follow me on Instagram at Eric Sandler. Keep it locked on culturemap.com for all the latest Houston bar and restaurant news. This is your periodic reminder that you can subscribe to this podcast anywhere you get your podcasts, like Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. I welcome your comments and reviews, but like Katie Nolan used to say, only if it's 5 stars and only if it's nice. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week.